Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy, knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Yeah.
Welcome into a championship edition of the USC Triple Double Podcast. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, along with my co-host, Connor Morissette, Mr. Triple Double himself. Connor, have you breathed? Have you been able to get your breath back after that weekend of basketball? Apparently, the Trojans come to play in March.
I have. We're talking about 5 wins on this show. I don't think we've talked about that many wins all year. And it's March, so it's the right time to be doing it. Can't wait to get into the women's Pac-12 tournament championship. And the men are playing well, too. We're hitting our stride here.
Yeah, it's interesting to see both teams finally play their potential for once. And ton of big-time wins. The women getting 2 top 10 wins, including a top 5 win. The men getting their first top 5 wins since 2008. What a week for USC basketball. And the Galen Center was rocking this week. It was rocking in Vegas. We're going to have on Ahmad, our beat writer for the women's team. He's going to come in and join us in a little bit. But first, for any first-time listeners, the USC Triple Double Podcast, part of the Peristyle Podcast family of shows, the Triple Double is focused on the men's and women's basketball programs at USC. Each week, we break down all the latest news and action for both teams, as well as look forward to the upcoming matchups. And this week, as we said, we got a lot of positive news to talk about with the way that both teams played this past week, one of them winning the Pac-12 championship. We've got to talk about that for sure. But let's start on the men's side, Connor. Give me the recap of the men. A team that has been slowly seemed to be getting their footing. We talked to DJ Rodman last week. He was very positive about the potential of this team going forward, and they showed some of that potential this week.
Yeah, the men look good, sweeping the Arizona schools. They won against Arizona State Thursday night, 81-73. Boogie Ellis scored 28 points. He hit 3 threes, and Ozziah Sellers had a 3 in between that in the second half that really pushed USC over the top and helped them to separate a little bit. That was a big win. And then an even bigger win came Saturday against Arizona, number 5 team in the country, 78-65. The Trojans take down the Wildcats at home. First top 5 win since 2008. DJ Rodman scored 19 points on 7 of 8 shooting. Kobe Johnson also had 19 points. Arizona was in a little bit of a letdown spot after winning the Pac-12 earlier in the week, but USC really dominated them in the second half. And even though it was a letdown game, I think it was really significant for USC to come out on senior night and kind of take it to Arizona a little bit. There were a lot of Wildcat fans in the Galen Center crowd. That was a big win.
Yeah, they got the big win, and you wonder, hey, did Arizona go out and party a little bit to celebrate? What exactly happened there? But you got to be happy with the way USC played, playing defense, making free throws, doing all these things we've been wondering all season. Where is that at? But first, we got to talk about the women's. We'll get back to the men. We'll do our 3 up, our 3 down, our triple double. We got all that coming. But the women, winning the Pac-12 tournament for the first time in 10 years and a decade, going back to the NCAA tournament, back-to-back seasons, you know, first time since they had, you know, since 2014, they had been a 9-year absence, and now back-to-back seasons. What Lindsey Gottlieb has done with this program, not only just bringing in someone like Juju Watkins, obviously that's a huge piece of this team, but they showed throughout this week, it's not just the Juju show. It's Juju and the Nerds. It's a full team effort. I love the comments from Mackenzie Forbes at the end of it, talking about us, everything she answered. And the fact that they said this is for Cheryl and Lisa and Tina, and this is, you know, we're doing this on their shoulders. All those comments were terrific. Walk us through what happened in the women's tournament this weekend.
Sure. So they started with a win over Arizona. They were up 20-9 in the first quarter, and it looked like, okay, this might be a easy win. And then the Wildcats, as they've done a lot this year, they fought back, and eventually USC, I don't want to say hung on, but they kind of hung on a little bit. Caitlin Davis made a layup to make the score 65-60, which eventually put the game out of reach. But Arizona led by 4 with 3:28 to go in the third, and they made it a one-possession game with 10 seconds left. So this one was nervy all the way through. Juju Watkins scored 17 points, 8 rebounds, but had 9 turnovers. Either way, USC survives. Let's get to the more important games after that. So they then beat number 7 UCLA in the next round and the semis. Juju tweaks her ankle very early in that game, aggravates it in overtime. The overtime aggravation, it looked like she might potentially forget only that game. It might be done for a while, and somehow she comes back after that, scores 33 points, 10 rebounds, and USC just wins this rock fight, physical battle against UCLA. It was a battle of toughness, and USC came out on top. The big key play was in the first overtime off of a missed free throw. Caitlin Davis tips the ball back to Caleb Padilla, who passes to Mackenzie Forbes, who didn't shoot very well in the night, only 5 of 20, but she made that big three in overtime after Caleb Padilla gave her the ball to tie the game, sent it to the second overtime, and USC hung on. Just a really gritty win, and that women's team, man, they know how to win basketball games. And in the championship, who would have thought Stanford, best team in the conference, it's their easiest game. And they win 74-61. Stanford didn't get within 8 points of USC in the second half. Juju didn't play well, season low, 9 points. Didn't matter. Mackenzie Forbes scored 26 points on 11-21 shooting. Stanford came into the game with the number one rebounding margin in the country. That didn't matter either, because USC out-rebounded them 48-28. Rhea Marshall scored 10 points, had 18 rebounds, a season high. Cameron Brink and Kiki Iriafa, 19 points and 18 points. The box score looks good, but USC did a really nice job of keeping those two in check, the two post players for the Cardinal, and they win the Pac-12 tournament. And after Mackenzie Forbes had the great interview with Holly Rowe, we'll get into all that. Lindsey Gottlieb had some great comments. This team, they're hot. They've won 12 of 13 games, and I can't believe that Stanford game. Easy is the wrong word, but they just weren't challenged like they were in the two previous games, and Stanford is the best team in the conference. Maybe not anymore now, USC is, but on paper, Stanford was, and for USC to play that well with Juju not playing well, that really showed me a lot.
Yeah, my easiest sounds like the incorrect word, but it's true. I mean, it was of the three games, that was the easiest one for USC as far as coming down to the wire. You're not going to overtime with UCLA against Arizona. All three games, and something that, you know, to watch going forward, all three games, they get a double-digit lead in the first quarter and then let the other team ride back into it. Arizona fighting for their tournament hopes. You know, that win against USC solidifies them as a team in. Now, looking at bracketology, they have Arizona as one of the last one I saw with Charlie Cream that they are the last four in. I think they're a tournament team to me. That team, especially with the injuries they sustain and going through it, you know, I think they've been fantastic and challenged USC tremendously in this last run, you know, to see them getting better. So potentially 7 teams for the Pac-12. We'll see if Washington State or Cal can get in. They're on the bubble out right now, but we'll see what the NCAA selection committee does. You know, in a year where the Pac-12 is the toughest we've probably seen it in a long time, it's been good for 4 or 5 teams, but it's 6 deep for sure, and potentially 7, 8, 9 teams could say are worth getting into the NCAA tournament. USC runs their way through the tournament and goes through the number 7 team and then the number 2 team. With that, we got to bring in our guy, Ahmad. Ahmad's been covering USC all season, the women's team. We're going to bring him in. Ahmad, if you're there, let me know what you thought of USC, their run through the tournament, their ability to find a way to win without Juju making it.
So the number one thing that I saw was just this grit by this team, honestly. They were able to just pull out wins. They were able to, go on runs. They're able to do a lot of things that a lot of people did not expect them to do. I think they were picked fourth in the preseason. And they definitely spoke about that after the championship game. We were picked fourth. We weren't expected to be here in this position. So I think the number one thing is they were able to just, pull out runs and beat these teams. They beat Stanford twice. Now, the first time it was a Juju show, during the regular season, she scored 51, a historic output. But the second time, it wasn't even about her. The things that I saw on that court against Stanford, they were able to frustrate Kiki and Cameron Brink. They were frustrated. They could not get any calls. Clarice Akinwafo was able to, and also Caitlin Davis, they were able to defend the entry passes down low. And those things, those were game changers for USC.
I would say you could definitely see the frustration from those two in particular. I think that's a great point, just the inability for them to really run their offense. You saw multiple times where they couldn't get that entry pass in and stuff, and that led to some of that frustration. The quintessential smoothness that you normally see from a Stanford team, USC was able to take them out of that. So they were able to, kind of change the game plan for Stanford and, what they were able to normally do. I mean, Cameron Brink, they both had solid games and shot well from the field and all those things. And Cameron Brink, though, got 9 of those points from the three-point line. Like, she had to go outside because USC was able to kind of clog everything up in the middle. So I think that was a really good point by you, Ahmad, that they were really stopping those entry passes from getting there. What did you have to say, Connor?
I'm curious, Ahmad, being in Vegas, what was some of the best memories and maybe the post-game comments that will stay with you after this? Just between Mackenzie Forbes and the ESPN interview, that was awesome, and the confetti and cutting down the nets. Just take me through what happened after they won the championship and what you'll remember most from those moments.
Well, I think the number one thing was their celebration after beating UCLA. Now, before even the championship game, they were celebrating like they had won the championship. But one thing that was said was they went into that day, they woke up that morning and they said, it's time to win a championship. They had that mindset and they were able to get it done. They practiced like they were going in for a dogfight. That entire place was rocking. There were more fans in the stadium for the UCLA and USC game, and that place was electric, than against Stanford. But regardless of how many people were in the stands, everyone who was courtside, they all celebrated with the team. Everyone ran on the court. The celebration started when they got 2 steals back-to-back to end the game and easy layups. And then on that third time they came down the court, Mackenzie Forbes came down and she threw the ball to the first or second row in the stand. The celebration had started before the clock even ended. It was crazy.
Yeah, the atmosphere seemed like it was electric. You've watched this team all season. You've seen them at the very beginning. We've been watching along, but you've been in the arena. What's been the biggest change you've seen from maybe early in the season to now? Because one of the things was, after the game, Lindsey Gottlieb talks about how she didn't think this team would have won this game 6 weeks ago. She didn't think that the team could have played this way without Juju going off in the championship game. But everyone else seemed to step up. What have you seen from this team that has been, building from earlier in the season? Where have they grown the most to you?
Support. Their support system has been really good, right? You see the Galen Center during women's basketball games and there's not too many people there, right? There's, some friends, some family, a few supporters here and there. But the number one thing is toward the end of the regular season, there were a lot of kids. There were a lot of families. There were a lot of fans in those stands in the Galen Center to support women's basketball. And time after time after time again, Lindsey Gottlieb had said, "Thank you for the support. I appreciate it. Next game, come on out. We play this game. You know, after the first few home games, she had to remind everyone, "Let's do this again. I love the support. Let's come back out." Toward the end of the season, she didn't have to tell anyone anything because those stands were full. And there were a lot of people in those stands that were supporting, so she didn't have to remind people when they play again because people knew. "You want to come out? You want to support Los Angeles? Come see Juju play." She's going to do something. She's going to score 30. Now, that's another thing where she scores 30 13 times in the season. And, of course, we talk about her scoring 9. But me personally, I always forget that 30 points in a game is pretty phenomenal. And I always forget that she doesn't have to score 30 every night. So the fact that she scored 9 and they beat the number 2 team in the country is crazy. But support, that is the biggest thing.
Yeah, the last thing for me, Ahmad, on Juju, is her ankle okay? I know she sort of said it's a sprained ankle, I'll be fine, but she didn't really look like herself in that championship game. Stanford threw some crazy defense at her. Do you have any update on her ankle and what people said after the game regarding that?
So there was nothing really that was said. The number one thing that I know about Juju, I mean, I watched, you know, Kobe Bryant play for many, many years. And the one thing about Kobe was, no matter what exactly it was, now in the back end of his career, he tore his Achilles, so he couldn't really play and run on it. But the number one thing about Juju is I see a lot of similarity there where little ailments, little things here and there, it's not going to phase her. She's not going to sit out. She's not going to do, you know, the only game that she sat out, it was with an illness, but the entire team had an illness. And, you know, that game that she sat out, Mackenzie Ford went off against Long Beach State. So if it's something little, you know, she can get scratched. She can have kind of a tweak in her ankle. She'll adjust. You know, they'll adjust, you know, an ankle wrap or anything like that. She had a knot on her forehead. She played through that. I mean, little things like that, it doesn't faze her. So I don't personally see any reason for her to sit out. I don't think it's a major thing, but I don't have an update on that. And I don't really think they're going to talk about it because if it was up to her, she wouldn't even. And she was walking on the court in socks. So I don't think her ankle was like, I didn't see her limping. She was walking around in socks when they were celebrating on the court after the game, after the championship game. So I don't think that her ankle's injured or anything like that. I think it was just a little tweak. She should be good.
Well, the good thing is she'll have 2 weeks to get ready. You know, the women's tournament, obviously there is a week off between the conference tournament and Selection Sunday, and then they'll find out who will be coming to the Galen Center. So everyone out there will get a chance to come out and see the Trojans in the NCAA tournament. USC will host the first two rounds. Ahmad will be there. Connor and I will probably be there as well. We're going to have a full crew, but Ahmad, we really appreciate, you know, all the hard work so far this season. We got at least two more games. Well, at least one more game. We'll say two more games. Come on, let's go ahead and let's say they can beat a 16 seed. We're giving them a number one seed. But then, you know, we'll see if they make it the Sweet 16. If they can make it even farther than that, we'll see what happens on it. But Ahmad, we'll be there for it all. Ahmad, really, really appreciate your time, man.
Thank you very much. Last point, Juju Watkins breaks Cheryl Miller's record next game.
Only a couple more buckets. Thought it would happen actually in the championship game.
I had it ready.
But, you know, obviously Stanford threw the crazy defense at USC. Ahmad, thanks so much for the time, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I think the biggest thing, him talking about the support. I mean, that's the big thing we asked from what, week two? Was it week, you know, how early in the season did we say, you know, is there going to be a third person step up? You know, first it was, okay, who else is going to step up with Juju? And you got, who's going to be, you know, Robin to her Batman? Mackenzie Forbes showed that. And, you know, and then it was like, who else can be that third person? It doesn't have to be the same person every game, but they have gotten so many contributions recently. I thought Kayla Williams coming off the bench, 8 straight points. I mean, that was, I thought that was a game changer, because that was right when, you know, Stanford had just tied the game back up, or, you know, they pulled it within close. And she, you know, hits a bucket in the middle of the lane with the shot clock running down. Then she hits a corner three, and then she hits another three. Okay. All right, Kay Will, I see what you're working with over here. You know, and she's really stepped up down the stretch the last few games and provided some key minutes off the bench. And it just seems like this team has figured out who they are, what their roles are, whether it be from the very beginning when we talked about Kayla Padilla. It's like, we need her to, you know, we would like to see her shoot more, because, you know, we know that she can score. But she's found a role of being that point guard, but also, you know, being able to shoot those clutch shots and different things. What's probably been the biggest thing that stood out to you about the growth of this team from early in the season to now?
You nailed it. Are you familiar with that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles meme where it's like first half of the image, it's the one big guy and he's holding the hands of all the little turtles and they're walking. And then the other image,
Master Splinter.
Yeah, he's older and the little turtles are bigger and then they are guiding him. That's exactly what happened against Stanford. The first Stanford game, Juju scores 51 points and she's leading. They're not kids, but it makes sense. She's leading the team to a win. And then in the other game, the now more experienced teammates are carrying her to a victory. So I just felt like that image summed it up perfectly. I'm going to write about that for our site this week. So a little sneak peek there. But that's to me, that just look at the two Stanford games, and that tells you all you need to know, the story about this season. Because we were critical after that Stanford game, like 12 points for Mackenzie Forbes, and then no one really did anything. I think the next highest scorer had 4 points. Like, that wasn't sustainable.
Yeah, in that first meeting, non-Juju players had 16 points.
Yeah.
So exactly. You had 12 from Mackenzie Forbes and 4 from the rest of the team. So 16 of their 67 points. So 24%. That was their lowest percentage of the season. Now, great. You know, obviously, when someone's going off like that, they're going to score. In the championship game, USC's points, 65 of their 74 were scored by players other than Juju Watkins, 88%. So their highest percentage in a game that she played in during the season. Like, that just shows you that they can win in different ways, too. It's partly the support system, but it's also they can adapt. You know, and Juju enables them to do that, you know, because she is she's willing to pass when she needs to. She's willing to, draw in all the interest. And then, you know, that led to some open shots. The first play of the game, you know, it's like, okay, what is Stanford going to come out in? And Lindsay Gottlieb talked a little bit about it afterwards. She's like, oh, I thought they were probably coming out in the zone to try to do some different things. But they knew there was going to be a special game plan for Juju Watkins. And she drives into the lane. And basically the entire team just swarms her. And she kicks it out to Mackenzie Forbes, wide open, three-pointer swish. And that gets Forbes going. You know, she sees that first swish through it, you know, and it, you know, maybe that's contested shot. It rims off, and she doesn't have the same confidence, you know, on the next shot or whatever it may be. But it all started from that play. And that's, you know, that's kind of emblematic of what we've seen. Because in that, you know, in the UCLA game, you know, it just seemed like different people stepping up. Mackenzie Forbes, you know, Juju misses a free throw. We're like, oh my goodness, how you miss a free throw in overtime when you're trailing by 4 points? You got to have that point, right? Doesn't matter. Caitlin Davis just always seems to be in the right place. She tips it out to Kayla Padilla, and you thought it was going to be the connection. You know, that happened, I can't remember which game, the Arizona game, the same thing. She tipped it out and grabbed the rebound and kicked it out to Kayla Padilla for a three. This time, tips it to Padilla. She passes the other grad transfer from the Ivy League. Mackenzie Forbes is the one that knocks it down. Tie game. USC wins in overtime or double overtime, going away with it. So you know, they just find different ways to win. I think that's something that really shows the difference at the beginning of the season. I don't think they could have done that at the beginning of the season.
You know, sorry to cut you off, but like the Stanford game plan was, we're not going to let Juju Watkins beat us. And USC said, okay, fine. We're going to beat you in a different way. And the game wasn't close in the second half. So like, what else do you need to know? Like Juju earlier in the year, she needed to score 51 points to beat Stanford. And now she scored 9 and they still, it's an amazing turnaround. And that's, I mean, we were going on and on about how Lindsey Gottlieb deserved Pac-12 Coach of the Year. I think now it's so clear. The development of everyone around Juju has been tremendous. The scouting she did to get those players in, she deserves a ton of credit. And I know she doesn't care about that award. She just wants to win. But I felt like this year in a really loaded conference, and now after winning the conference tournament, it's so clear she was the best coach in the conference this year.
Yeah, and I thought there was a great game plan by Tara Vanderveer to come out and do that. But because of that game plan, it left those openings. One for Mackenzie Forbes. You saw her and Kayla Padilla early. Kayla Padilla had 2 back-to-back threes early. They had some wide open shots that gave them an opportunity to get going. That was big for their confidence, like I said. But also, you mentioned the rebounding margin. USC out-rebounded Stanford 48-28. And a lot of that came offensive end because of all the attention that they were playing their bigs up higher. They were leaving Rhea Marshall wide open on the baseline. If Rhea Marshall knocks down that shot 80% of the time, like they wouldn't do that. But she also, I thought Rhea Marshall played really well of not trying to shoot shots that weren't necessarily hers, attacking the basket and going in. Now she got blocked a couple of times by Brink, but I thought she played phenomenal. She has been, you know, ascending so well at the end of the season for USC. But that rebound margin was a large part of the, you know, the defense that Stanford was playing, because they were playing those bigs up higher to take away the lane from Juju. It was kind of, someone described it, one of the analysts or something, as kind of three dots in an eye. Like they're going to take away the wing driving. You're going to play individual one-on-one, but the defense in the middle of is going to be, you know, three dots in an eye. So you get by the first person, there's a second person, you get by the second person, there's still a third person. And it's just to frustrate someone who gets into the lane, kind of like Juju does. So she can't take that jumper, that mid-range jumper she likes to take when it's, hey, I get by the first person, there's a big waiting at the rim. And then if I get by the second big, there's another big waiting. Like it was a great defense in that regard, but it drew so much attention that it pulled those bigs away from the basket, and Caitlin Davis and Rhea Marshall made them pay. So again, give credit to them for attacking and finding a way to make Stanford pay, but also you got to give Juju credit for that. All goes back to her because of how good she is why they had so many offense rebounds, why they had the second chance points. I think it was 14-3 or 13-3 or something, their advantage in that category. So 20 being up plus 20 on rebound, that's good, right, Connor?
Against Stanford, it's great. Against anyone, it's good. Yeah, incredible. I still can't get over that.
5th time this year for Stanford? No. Like I said, you said earlier, Stanford led Division I rebound margining this season, entering the game. I don't know what it finished at, but 5th time in the last 25 seasons that Stanford's been out-rebounded by 20 in a game. That's just, wow. And that stats from Alexa Philippou from ESPN. But what a phenomenal stat. Like you just did one, the first meeting, you did something that never happens. It was the most points that Stanford, I think, had ever given up on at Maples, if I remember correctly, under Tara Vanderveer. Something never happens. Now, okay, we're going to switch the game plan. Doesn't matter. We'll do something different against you. Like, that's what stands out so much about this team. Something that has happened five times in the last 25 seasons under Tara Vanderveer at Stanford. USC does it, winning the rebound margin by plus 20. You know, let's jump into our triple double, because that's, you know, one of the things that stands out to me, that the rebounding was such a difference maker in this game for USC. So one of my triple doubles was the fact that USC was able to get that, and that Rhea Marshall played a big part in that. She's back to playing at like an All-American Team USA level. Remember, she played on Team USA during the summer and started out the season that way. Then the illness, and just was not the same for a long time. She's back playing at that All-American level. She's not scoring necessarily a ton of points every game. She had 10 points in this one. I think it was fourth or fifth consecutive double-double. She's giving you 10 to 18 per game, and that's way more than you necessarily need, because we've seen what USC can do with just Juju and McKenzie Forbes scoring in that Stanford game. But that just adds an extra element to USC, and her rebounding, she's just snatching balls off the glass and stuff. She was fantastic as well, but the rebounding was unbelievable.
So two of mine we've pretty much hit on. The first one was winning in different ways, with Juju only scoring the 9 points, and just comparing that first Stanford game to the second one. So we spent a lot of time there. My other one, Rhea Marshall, and just the rebounding overall. Rhea Marshall, she was someone who, in the middle of the season, when she did get healthy, it was like, you're showing signs, but I was sort of on the fence, like, can I really trust her in a big game? And I mean, she answered all of the questions that I had against Stanford. So my last one, excuse me, McKenzie Forbes. I we need to talk about her for a second, because what she did in the championship on the court is incredible. But the word that keeps coming to mind when talking about her is ambassador. What an incredible ambassador for the program she is, even though it's only going to be a one and done for her at USC. Just the class that she has at halftime, Holly Rowe interviews her and they have a nice exchange. And then she goes, thanks, Holly, and jogs off to the locker room. And then after the game, the emotion that she's showing, and us, just what a fantastic individual, what a fantastic team player, someone who I think is an exceptional leader, someone who's perfect for Juju Watkins as a freshman, who I think McKenzie Forbes, she's done an excellent job of deferring to Juju at times this season, but also being that veteran leader. And she had the big game against Stanford in the championship, 26 points, the clutch three against UCLA, the Pac-12 tournament MVP. So I want to shout her out. I think she's a tremendous ambassador for the program. If you're a USC fan, she embodies everything that you want in a woman of Troy. And credit to Lindsey Gottlieb, because they knew each other from Cal. And when Forbes entered the transfer portal, that relationship that they had was huge. And that's a big reason why she's at USC. And Juju gets the majority of the headlines. It's fully deserved. That recruitment is going to change USC women's basketball forever. But I think the recruitment of McKenzie Forbes, we haven't really talked about that at all in this show. And I think it's time we do that, because she just won the Pac-12 tournament MVP, and her recruitment, while not as significant as Juju's, I think it's very, very close, because this team, they're one of the best four teams in the country. They're going to be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. They've defied all odds, and they're doing way better than anyone anticipated. And McKenzie Forbes is a big, big reason why. So is Kaitlyn Davis. So is Kayla Padilla, the other Ivy League grad transfers. But McKenzie Forbes, I want to give her flowers. And she was my first up on the list. What a tremendous performance from her in Las Vegas.
Played all 40 minutes in the championship game after playing 48 minutes in the double overtime game. Now, that day off that this built into the women's schedule, absolutely clutch. So we should give one of our positives for the tournament set up that way, so that they could be playing at their best. But the five games before the championship game, now she scored 17 against UCLA, but she was 5 of 20. You know, she's 2 of 10 on two-pointers, 3 of 10 on three-pointers. They needed her to make shots, and she wasn't necessarily until that big clutch one. And it's the same thing we saw in that Arizona game. You know, she was huge in the overtime periods in the last seconds. But the five games before the championship game, she was averaging a little bit under 10 points, which is not terrible, but she was only shooting 24%, 24.6%, including 22% from three. Like, and they need her to be a shooter because she helps space the floor so Juju can drive and all those different things. In the championship game, she knocks down 4 of 8 threes. She goes 11 for 21. She was absolutely fantastic to go along with, what, 5 rebounds, a couple of assists, a couple of steals. You know, she's doing a little bit of everything for USC. She was outstanding in that game. Yes, Mackenzie Forbes definitely should be there. You know, the team efforts, we've talked about that. That's on my positive. The bench impact of Kayla Williams, that one really stood out to me. You know, because we waited all season, or we've been asking all season, like, who's going to step up as a number three scorer, much less number four, number five, which is what they've been getting recently with Kayla Williams coming in and making a couple shots. And then we wondered, you know, Taylor Bigby is the person we thought was going to be the one to do that. And she's played, her minutes have decreased, but she made a couple big threes against UCLA as well early in that game. So you're seeing those contributions from different people. Clarice Akinwafu, the defense she played in that game against Brink and Irioffen down low was really big. So I've went already past three, I'm sure. What about Tara Vandermeer? She got to Stanford in 1985-86. Her first two seasons at Stanford, she hovered around 500. USC beat the Cardinal twice each of those years. She then won the NCAA Coach of the Year award the next 3 years. That's ridiculous in and of itself. She won two national championships, won the Final Four there. USC hasn't sniffed two wins in a season against Stanford since, until this year. Before Lindsey Gottlieb arrived at USC, USC won 8 times in the 32 years prior. They play twice a year every year. Sometimes they play a third time in the Pac-12 championship. The only time they played one was when they, you know, the scheduling circle around, they only had to play them once. That happened once. So in 32 years, we're just going to say there's two games a year. That's 64 times. USC was 8-58 or 8-56, excuse me, something like that. In those times they won, those 8 times they won, the second matchup was rarely like a nail biter. Only last year when USC, they lost by 3, the second game there was a single possession. It was the only time in that whole span. So USC has really not ever came that close to beating Stanford twice. And they dominated Stanford twice. That is amazing to me. You know, that Stanford, it's not like, oh, well, Stanford's falling off, Tara's falling off, like, she won this, she's got the most wins all time, and she's retiring, her team's, you know, this is the end of her career type of thing, and her teams are fine. No, this is the number two team in the nation, and you just handled them easily. And like you said, they didn't even come within 8 points. Every single time that Stanford tried to make a little run, USC answered. They had points almost, I think it was every basket in the last, like, 8 minutes. The Stanford scored, USC had points after. So, like, these things are just kind of mind-blowing to me when you think about where this program was a few years back. And, you know, the diaspora of talent from Southern California going elsewhere. You keep the best player that's been here in 20 years or so in the state, local, keep her at home, and look at what has become, and give credit to Lindsey Gottlieb and her staff and what they built around her as well, and the bench players doing their role and everything else. It's just been phenomenal to watch, and we're looking forward to seeing what the next month holds for USC as well.
Absolutely. Do we have any downs? It's tough for me to get to the downs, but I have two kind of funny ones.
Go for it.
Well, the first, I guess one funny one, now they have so much time off, which is great for Juju Watkins and her ankle, but don't you kind of wish they were playing game one on Thursday or Friday this week? Just keep this thing rolling. I just hope the time away, it should help them in theory, but just not playing a game for a long time. I hope they don't start slow against whoever they play in the first round. And I'm trying to come up with a down. So that was my first one. And then the other one, I am a little concerned about Juju's ankle, but this time off should really help that. And she should be fine. The fact that she was able to continue against UCLA is huge, but those are, I was really trying, Chuck, and to find some downs with this team, and it's those two things. That's it.
Well, to yours real quick. I think if it was like the NFL playoffs where you have a bye, you know, and you're wondering, okay, you're going to stay sharp while the other team is just playing and they get confident. it's apples to apples here. You know, your opponent is going to have that time off too. It's not like there's conference tournaments that are running through this next week. You know, there are some of the smaller ones are, but like, you're not going to worry about their sharpness versus the other team's sharpness because they're playing closer. I don't think I would worry about that. So I think it's great for them.
Yeah.
And I know you were searching for negatives here, but I think it's great for them just because of how physical that Pac-12 tournament was. I thought all three of those games were battles, and, you know, it takes a lot of emotional out of you too. You know, the emotional investment can drain you at the same time. So I think it's a great opportunity for them to recharge, but I got two easy negatives, Connor.
Okay.
Number one, I mean, we just talked to Ahmad. He talked about the energy in the arena during that UCLA game. He talked about the confetti coming down. You know, you got Gavin Morris there, our guy, Gavin, who's everybody's guy, especially Lindsey Gottlieb and the women's basketball team's guy. You know, and he flew out for the Sunday championship game. He said he wouldn't miss it. My negative is we weren't there. Me and you, we weren't able to get out to Vegas for this one. So that one's a negative for sure. I wish we were there. It seemed like such a great atmosphere, and to see USC, you know, playing in some epic games like that. My other negative is that Juju Watkins is only averaging 30 points in her career against Stanford now. Yes, she scored 9. She's still averaging 30 against Stanford because she put up 51 the last time they played. So nice little 30-point average against Stanford, even when they held you to your career low. So that's my other negative for this one. Well, let's jump over the men's side. We talked a lot about the women, and rightfully so. But the men also had a really big week as well. They're playing some of their best basketball. As you mentioned, the two big wins. The first win over a top-five team since 2008. I thought it was 2018. I'm like, Connor's like, what? Who'd they play in 2018? I was like, let me look it up. I'm trying to figure this out. You know, I was going off something they said on the broadcast, and I thought I was remembering something. No, it's 2008. OJ Mayo and was in USC uniform. They went to Poly Pavilion and knocked him off behind. I think it was 25 from Devon Jefferson, and you know, big game from him. And Daniel Hackett had like 8 assists in the game, plus OJ had like 16. So big game. That was a long time ago. That also tells you it's the first top five win in the Andy Enfield era.
I asked him about that, and he did not like that. He said, we've had a lot of big wins here. We you know, come on. Classic Enfield style.
Now, granted, I will say that they have had some big wins. They've had a few 6-10 wins in there, and maybe that's partially to look at it and be like, the Pac-12 is not – it's not the women's Pac-12 this season, where there's, you know, there's constantly teams in the top five. You know, it's been what UCLA, USC, Colorado, and Stanford. You've had 4 different teams being there. It's like, okay, if Arizona's good, they'll be there. And then the years when Lonzo Ball is at UCLA, or they got, you know, a really high profile, they might be there. But otherwise, like, because USC beat Lonzo Ball, but they were ranked 8th at the time. So, like, they've had some big wins. We'll give them the credit for that. They blew out Kansas by 34 in the NCAA tournament. That won the top five Kansas team. So, first one in the Andy Enfield era. What do you got on your three positives? I mean, there's a lot of things that could go around here. For me, when I say go around, I think all around effort. Kobe Johnson just continues to play really good basketball. His last 6 games now, you upped it from the last 4 we gave you last week. Last 6 games, 12.5 points. 4.5 rebounds, 3 assists, nearly 4 steals, and he's shooting 45% from threes. If he was doing that all year, we're looking at a different season for USC. That's my first positive. What do you got for your three positives?
I had Kobe on my list as well. 6 steals against Arizona. I mean, whew, that is crazy. He's playing really good basketball right now, and he just looks like he has a swagger back. My first one, though, learning how to win, because last week, USC, they beat Washington on the road. And we talked about, is it going to be a turning point? I was a little bit more hesitant to say so than you were, Shotgun. And now that they've won 3 in a row for the first time all year, I can say definitively this team has turned a corner. And because they've just done it consistently now. It's only 3, but hey, 3 more than you've had all season. So that was significant to me, just the fact that the Washington game, the Huskies fought back and Isaiah Collier took over. Arizona State, they were tied at halftime with USC, and they're not a great team, but They pushed USC in the second half, and then Boogie Ellis performed really well. And I think USC scored 49 points in the second half to eventually beat the Sun Devils. And then Arizona, best team in the conference, and USC has an easy time with them in the second half and wins going away. So I think earlier in the year, maybe one of those games wouldn't have gone USC's way. They wouldn't have been able to close it out, and they closed out all three. That's significant to me, especially in a year where the Pac-12, it's just not very good. And it's too bad they got to play Arizona potentially if they win against Washington in the Pac-12 tournament. That's probably the one team you don't want to play. But hey, USC just beat them. It seems to me, outside of Arizona, anyone's beatable in the conference. So just the fact that USC has been able to stack up wins is huge. Do you want to go back and forth, or do you want me to just finish off here?
Go ahead.
And then my other one, the Arizona win, that was a total team effort. Kajani Wright, for the first time in a couple of weeks, gave you some good minutes, and he guarded Umar Bala. It wasn't always perfect, but he showed that, hey, he's another body you can throw in on the inside, and you can trust him. I felt like you walked away feeling like, okay, it's not perfect, but it wasn't a disaster guarding Umar Bala when Kajani Wright was on him. DJ Rodman was huge. Kobe Johnson was huge. Boogie was a little quiet, but he still gave you something. How about Bronny James hitting the big three at the end of the first half? And he had some nice moments in the second half. He loves to play Arizona, which is good if USC sees them again. We've seen at times this year, Shotgun, where it's just like one or two guys play well, and then you get nothing from anyone else. And I felt like against Arizona, it was a full team effort. That was really encouraging to see. And USC's guards were just so much better than the Arizona guards in that one. Arizona's guards were freaking terrible. Kobe Johnson was my last one, and we already hit on him. So good things are happening with the men. Beat Washington. Who knows what happens against Arizona? And then if you can get through the Wildcats, win two more, and maybe we're going I don't know where they'd play, but we're going somewhere, man, if they're making the NCAA tournament. I want them in. I want them to go.
It would be nice to see what they can do. You know, they're finally playing to their potential. You saw that in this week. You know, there were some runs. You know, Arizona State comes back late in the first half, and that was the surprising thing about the Arizona game, I think, to me. The most surprising thing is they never gave up that end-of-half run that they normally do, and Arizona is a team that thrives on those. And I think that frustrated Arizona because – there was so much sloppiness with their turnovers that they could never get in a consistent run. Now, they weren't getting calls, and I think that USC, both the men and women, benefited from the physical play that was allowed in, you know, the games, and that's the way college basketball probably should be called, and that's the way it's going to be called for USC when they go to the Big Ten. You're going to play physical games all the time. Teams are going to muck it up as much as possible. You're going to take some bumps and bruises. So you got to have a good trainer that gets you iced up, and you know, you got to take care of the body a lot. But you know, I think they're playing with confidence. That's a huge positive. You know, DJ Rodman, Kobe Johnson, knocking down threes, not being afraid to shoot them. You know, Isaiah Carter didn't have necessarily a huge week, but you know, he was able to attack and create for teammates. He had 5 assists against Arizona. And that also happens when you knock down some threes, you know, when you drive and kick out. But they're playing with confidence, and guys are trusting each other, it seems like. And that leads me to another positive, is playing defense together. You know, it just seems like the defense is a unit, much more so than it has been in any other point this season. So that leads me to my 2 negatives, is that they needed this 3-point defense earlier in the season. Now, this is kind of a back end of negative because I couldn't find many negatives this week on either side. So we're doing what they needed earlier in the season. They held Arizona and Arizona State to 9-for-37 shooting from 3-point range, 24%. We've talked about several times on this show about how bad their 3-point defense is. They're one of the worst, 30 or 40 in the nation. And that's a lot of teams. You know, there's 390 teams. What's the number? It's way up there.
Yeah, 391, I think.
Yeah, and USC's in the 300s. You're in the 300s, you're not doing good. But, you know, they've been getting up like 36%. They gave up 24%. If they've done that against Washington State, they win that game. They've done that, you know, this other game or this other game, they win those games. So they needed it earlier. So that's one of my negatives. My other negatives, they needed their free throw shooting earlier. How about their free throw shooting? 25-30 against Arizona State, 83%. And they were 15-15 against Arizona until the last seconds when they were already, the game was already in hand, and they went, 1-for-3 or something. So they shot 89%, 16-18. Like, what? Where'd that come from? You know, just suddenly this team is, this week at least, they hit on all cylinders. So, you know, my two negatives there were ones that are really positives from this week, but something we would love to have seen earlier in the season to see what this team would have actually been able to do.
My two, one, it's a little bit out of their control. You'd think if you win games, you'd be in a better spot for the Pac-12 tournament. I felt like they got a bad draw, even though they beat Arizona, because you're on the side of the bracket with Arizona. I think anyone else is beatable. I don't know if a motivated lot of Arizona fans in Las Vegas team is going to be beatable by USC if they can get by Washington. So that was too bad. And just a bad stroke of luck with freaking Arizona State playing UCLA. If Arizona State wins that game, USC is on the other side of the bracket. But Jose Perez, who scored 25 points against USC Thursday night, quits, and he's not available against UCLA. So, of course, UCLA beats Arizona State without their second leading scorer. And that puts USC at the number nine seed. So I felt like that was a tough break for him. But, hey, if you're going to win the conference tournament, you probably would have had to have beaten Arizona anyway. Would have been better if it was in the championship, in my opinion. Whatever. The other one, the Arizona turnovers sort of overshadowed USC's, but they had 14 turnovers against Arizona State and then 11 against Arizona. You just don't want to be in double digits with the turnovers. Kobe Johnson, we gave him a lot of credit and it's deserved, but he's still a couple times every game has some passes where you're like, come on, man, what were you looking at there? So if he can clean that up, that'll be big. I think right now the free throw shooting's better. The defense is better, like you said, shotgun, but the turnovers, that's still popping up a little bit. And you got to be close to perfect if you're going to go on a run here in this Pac-12 tournament, and the turnovers, if they continue to do what they're doing, that might hurt them.
How about, real quick, since you brought up turnovers, we didn't mention this talking about the women, but USC and Stanford had 11 and 12 turnovers. You know, not a big discrepancy there. The points off turnovers, 21-6. USC turned 11 turnovers into 21 points compared to Stanford turning 12 into 6 turnovers. Just wanted to point that out real quick. You know what? That's one thing, USC, you want to take care of the basketball. Obviously, if you're plus 7 in the turnover margin, though, I think you feel okay. Yeah. And you're plus 5 in the assist, you would like to be better. But, you know, they had a 17-10 advantage on the points off turnovers. That ends up being a bigger number than the actual turnovers themselves, because, again, it's those live ball ones, you know, that lead to a fast break, that lead to a big Arizona dunk or Arizona 3. Those are the ones that really kill you against a team like Arizona. What about the statistic, Arizona having 14 offensive rebounds and having 2 second chance points. And
which that came number, right at the end. Yeah.
That number came in garbage time in the last like 30 seconds or whatever. So it was really 13 offensive rebounds with no second chance points. So even though USC was getting beat on the boards, they were locking down. And again, that's the difference in this year's team throughout the majority of the season versus the years past. They've given up offensive rebounds in the past, but their defense has been so good that it didn't matter because they would just force another miss.
Sneeze there. Glad we got the mute button. I agree. The defense was better. And sometimes Umar Bhalo, when he gets an offensive rebound, he kind of goes up like crazy. And I felt like USC, the bigs, this is what we were looking for earlier in the year. It's not perfect, but Joshua Morgan and Vince and Kajani, Andy Enfield could throw them in, and those guys defended well enough against Umar Bhalo. And maybe if you play Arizona again, they score like 6 second chance points on all those offensive rebounds. But I think the interior defense has just been so much better. And the one thing that they still need to work on is catching passes from Isaiah Collier. Kajani Wright could have had 2 easy layups. Collier rifled 2 perfect passes at him. Those bigs are still kind of got stone hands a little bit. But how about Josh Morgan's pass to Kobe Johnson in the second half? I felt like that was one of the best passes of the year, not made by Isaiah Collier. So just because those guys sometimes can't catch the passes doesn't mean they can't throw them.
But give Josh Morgan credit. I think he's done a really good job recently of catching passes. There was the one that Isaiah Collier fed him off kind of a no-look bounce pass, and he catches it on the move, goes through traffic, and then goes up and gets a bucket. I was like, whoa, where'd that come from, Josh Morgan? He only played 12 minutes against Arizona because he was in foul trouble the entire time. Vince Iwichukwu got in some foul trouble. So like you said, Kajani Wright really stepped up. Harrison Hornery played a couple minutes as well, just kind of buying them some time at times. But that again goes back to a guy that we haven't really talked about, DJ Rodman, excuse me, has been outstanding for them recently. And playing the four, getting rebounds for them. He had 7 rebounds against Arizona. You don't ask him to get offensive rebounds. Just block out, make sure no one gets it. And I think they're doing a great job of that. I thought the rebounding was spectacular this game. They lost the margin by 8, and I don't care because I love the way that their guards attack the rebounds. Bronny James, you know, he had a career high 6 rebounds, and I want to say at least 4 off the top of my head were literally right beside the rim. Like, he's coming back to help. He's not waiting on a long rebound that comes off and he grabs or a tip ball that comes out. They're at the rim trying to attack those because they knew that's where Arizona was going to kill them. And so the game plan was everyone get on the glass, get down there, fight like hell, and make it happen. And they did that. So a lot of credit to them for winning that game. Good game plan from them. And then it really helps when Arizona's guards were poo-poo in that. The real negative that I did have, you know, my two negatives were kind of positives, really, but the real negative is that they need to get Boogie and Isaiah Carter going at the same time. And that really hasn't been the case recently. You know, Carter goes off for 31, Boogie doesn't do much. Boogie goes off for 28 against Arizona State, and Carter has 8. Like, they need to get those guys going at the same time to be able to make a run in the Pac-12 tournament, I think. I don't think they can do it with off and on, off and on. If one of them goes and the other one does it each game, you got a chance, but you really help yourself out if both of them get going. All right, real quick, let's do our last two segments of recap here. The Juice A section. What stood out to you about Juju Watkins, Isaiah Carter this week?
How about Juju gifting a pair of shoes to all of her teammates? I thought that was really cool. And I know you had a funny tweet about that too, Shotgun. It just shows, like, you know how sometimes you have the great player and the chemistry is just not there, but this year it's been so perfect. And that goes back to Lindsey Gottlieb deserving a lot of credit. Like, Juju is so talented. She has all these sponsorships. They're all deserved, but sometimes that can be challenging to go through if you're another player on the team, but it's just worked really, really well this season. And hey, I'd love Juju if she was giving me a free pair of shoes too.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's any animus on the team and Juju's getting all the attention type of thing, or these grad transfers are coming and they're stealing my minutes. Oh, maybe there's some of that behind the scenes. There's always, when you're in your dorm room or you're eating together, I should be playing a couple more minutes type of thing. But this team rallies around each other. Like, and we see it with their play, but also in a situation like this, I mean, she gifts the entire team shoes. And I think Rhea Marshall said at one point, she's like, we were talking and we're like, the shoes, our travel shoes just aren't that comfortable or something like that. And so the next thing they know, Juju goes out and gets them. Now, it helps that she is sponsored by Nike, and this is probably through an NIL deal and everything. She's not just going out. Maybe she is. Maybe she is just going out and be like, I'll drop $100 from everybody. I don't care because I'm making enough money from my NIL as well. And this is going to help. You know, if it's like take care of your offensive alignment type of thing. You know, if you're a quarterback, you take care of your offensive alignment because they take care of you. And when Juju gets knocked down 6-8 times a game, who's there to pick her up? Who's there to defend her? Those type of things. So you take care of them. And the shoes are really cool. But I thought it was really awesome. And yeah, I had a sarcastic tweet that some people did not get about how these high-profile kids these days just come in and act like the world is owed to them. They don't do anything. Oh, you can tell our teammates resent her. That's what I said in it. But I thought it was really cool. Not only she gave her shoes to the teammates, she gave shoes to the coaches. She gave shoes to the support staff as well. So that's really cool. So your trainers and everybody else, their nutritionist, all those people she got shoes for. I thought that's really awesome. It shows so much about her character. We've heard nothing but good things about her from our interactions with her when I've interviewed her before the season. Like, she's doing all this. She's got all this media attention, all everything. And she continues to be pretty down to earth. And she's an LA kid. And she just wants to put on for her city, and she's doing it for the women of Troy, and you know they're got her back as well. What about Isaiah Carter? What's it about his game or around his game this week?
Well, I haven't heard much around his game. I just think Andy Enfield always talks about after these games how badly Isaiah wanted to come back from his injury, and we were talking on this show when he was hurt. Is he going to come back? Could he just mail it in? Is he going to just go to the draft and say, see you to USC? And I think the fact that he did come back and really wanted to come back, and now USC's playing a lot better with everyone healthy, speaks to him as a competitor. But I think he saw something in USC too, and maybe he just wanted to help his draft stock. But if it really was a dumpster fire season, which it looked like it was for some moments there when he wasn't available, I don't know if he does come back. But all season long, the coaches have said, we're not playing well, but we haven't lost the team. There's still buy-in. And that sort of gave me and you a glimmer of hope, like maybe once everyone's available, once everyone's healthy, this could go back on track here. And that's what we're seeing. And I don't want to give Isaiah Collier too much credit for just doing what a normal player would do, which is get hurt, come back and play well. But I think he's in a bit of a different situation, and just wanted to shout him out for that, because now USC is playing a lot better. He's playing well too. Good things are happening.
All right, I'm going to give a little inside baseball here, as Ryan likes to call it. Well, we got off the air last week with DJ Rodman. I got a chance to chat with him a little bit. He told me that Isaiah Collier is the best player he's ever played with. He said, hands down, no doubt, best player I've played with. And we were chatting about Isaiah Collier, and he told me, he's got to be super frustrating to guard. He said, and DJ's, one of their best defenders, he and, Kobe Johnson, as far as wing defenders, versatility, all that type of stuff. So they get switched on Isaiah Collier in practice. He said he's the strongest guy on the team as far as like lifting weights and stuff. When they go in the weight room, he lifts the most weight of any of his teammates. But he said that he said Isaiah Collier makes him feel so weak when he comes in the lane and charges in there, because he just has such a unique way of using his body. He knows his body so well that he uses his low center of gravity. His legs are super strong. That he plays through all that contact. And I thought it was just super interesting to listen to DJ talking about it. And how he said, I'm the strongest guy on the team, and I feel like the weakest when Isaiah Collier drives into the lane because of how he can attack the basket. And like we mentioned last week, he's in such better control than he was before the injury. He's come back. He's just playing like a different player. But how about one thing that's been a knock on his game has been the shooting, right? The last couple games, he's shot better from outside. We've seen him make some threes. I think it was the Washington game, he made a couple outside. How about his free throw shooting? That's also been a knock on him, because they've taken him out at the end of games earlier this season because offense for defense, and we don't want him to get fouled if we're leading type of thing. 5 for 5 on free throws against Arizona. Now, that's a small, a small sample size, but I think it's just a positive sign for him that he just continues to develop and continues to be able to, make strides in his game. It's easy to dream on him if you're an NBA GM at this point, because you see those potential, especially if you watched him earlier in the season and people are nitpicking his game and saying, no, you can't do this, you can't do that, his defense is terrible. I think his defense has been on a whole different level the last few weeks too. So all those things I think are really positive signs for Isaiah Collier. He didn't have a monster week this week. He had, 8 points and, 15 or something. Like, for him, that's nothing. And still made a big impact and continues to play really well, not turning the ball over, not trying to do too much, and that USC wins 2 games and knocks off number 5, Arizona. He didn't have a monster game. The number 1 recruit in the country didn't have a monster game, and USC got a top 5 win. And then they did it again the next day. Same recipe. What about our Stuntin' Like My Daddy? What do you got from Bronny this week? Did he play against Arizona State? It didn't feel like he did. I know he did play some minutes, but did not make much of an impact there. But like you said, he likes playing against Arizona.
That's my big takeaway. He hit the big three at the end of the first half to put USC up 34-30. And when he does anything, the crowd, it's just an extra jolt from the crowd. So I think it's kind of like a 2-for-1 when he does something good. It's good for the team on the court, and then it's just good for – it gives everyone a boost because that place goes nuts. So that was great to see. He had the nice steal and dunk. I think he likes playing against Kylan Boswell a little bit because they go back to playing against high school – or playing against each other in high school, and Kylan Boswell's Corona Centennial team – beat Bronny James's Sierra Canyon team at Sierra Canyon in a big playoff game at the end of the pandemic season. So it was home courts. And I don't think Bronny took too kindly to that. And whenever Arizona plays, I think he takes that matchup personally. And hey, whatever gets you going is good with me. So I hope that USC gets to play Arizona again, because I'm excited to see what Bronny James does. He has put together two really good games against the Wildcats, and I think he'll do it again if given the opportunity.
Yeah. Big time, or big step ups in those games. Two steals in the Arizona game, a block, an assist. I think he had one turnover, but 5 points on two or three shooting, hit that late three, showing confidence. And like I said, I think I said last week, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, is like, we want to see him have that assertiveness. We saw, I think it was the Washington State game, his first shot, just really attacking and going for it. And we saw that a couple times early in the season, that's kind of backed away now that Isaiah Collier and Boogie are back. So I don't know if he just feels that that's not my role. But I think the biggest thing to take away from Bronny this week is, what is dad showing up in baby blue at the Galen Center in? Like, come on. Like, I know the Twitter account for USC Hoops gave LeBron a pass, but come on, LeBron. Let's have a little bit better feel, bud.
Come on, Pops.
Can't be showing up to the rivals, to the game in the rivals' colors there. But anyways, with that, we're going to jump into our break. And then when Connor and I return, we'll take a look forward at the upcoming week of action for the men. The women will be off. And to close out the show, we'll take a look at the Pac-12 tournament overall and give our thoughts on that, too.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back from the break. Make sure to check out our sponsors. Also, please like, subscribe, and review the podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. Also, if you have any questions, comments, requests, you can send them in to podcast@uscfootball.com. We need to get some questions, guys. I haven't had a question here in a while here. So make sure you put triple-double or basketball pod in the headline. Make sure it gets directed at us. Connor, we got to look at where they stand. USC women are 26-5, and as we're recording this, the AP poll came out. USC is number 3 in the Associated Press poll. It's the highest ranking in 38 years since Cheryl Miller was a senior on the court for USC.
Wow. Last time it was the highest rating of my lifetime, and that continues.
Now it's almost the highest rating of my lifetime. We're right on the cusp there. I don't know exactly when that came out. I think it was 86, so I think I'm still a little bit older. USC moved up. They've been hovering around the 12-13 spot in the net. After you beat UCLA and you beat Stanford, you think they bump up a few spots. They move up to 10th, but they're still going to be, we think they're still going to be a number one seed. 5 wins over teams in the top 9 of the final regular season net rankings. That's pretty impressive to me. You know, 2 against Stanford, 2-0 record against them, 2-1 record against UCLA, and 1-0 against Ohio State. Pac-12 tourney champs. We don't have to look at the standings anymore. We got the tourney champs coming to the Galen Center, and they should be hosting the first round and the second round of the NCAA tournament in 2 weeks. So if you were a USC fan, make sure that you prepare to get your tickets for that. Now, I don't know. It'll either be – so the women's tournament, unlike the men's, is Thursday, Saturday, and or Friday, Sunday is the couples that you have. The women's tournament starts a day later. They start on Friday. So it'll be USC will either play Friday and Sunday, or they will play Saturday and Monday if they are to win the first round game, as we expect them to do. So be prepared. USC women could be playing on Monday, but also it'll be on national TV. You get to see them again. I don't know how many people tuned in for the first time. It was like, wow, this team's fun. They didn't even get to, they're probably disappointed they didn't see much in Juju, and you know, her only scoring 9 points. But it's only the third time they've been on national TV this year, including one game on True TV. So I don't know if that actually counts. But they are, you know, the Juju now leads the nation in free throw attempts, free throw makes. She's second in points. She's got 810. She is right behind Cheryl Miller's single season points record at USC. So that record will come down in the first game. I doubt they'll stop the game or anything, but that would be kind of cool if they at least, you know, recognized her in the middle of timeout or something. We'll see. That's where the women stand. What about the men? Where do they stand now?
91st. In the net rankings, but that win over Arizona was big, because if they lose, they're in 11th in the Pac-12, and now a little bit of a better thing on the resume. Instead of being 11th in the Pac-12 this year, they finished 9th, so not great, but hey, better than 11th, and they're going to play Washington in the Pac-12 tournament. Control their own destiny. Just got to win every game here. Go on a 4-game win streak, and they'll be playing in March Madness, so I hope they can.
The one difference between football and every other sport is you get a chance to win your way in. You have an opportunity. So you control your own destiny regardless. You know, if USC football was playing hot at the end of the season, the Rose Bowl year you think back to, oh man, wouldn't it be great if they had a chance to play their way and see what they could do? We'll get a chance to see if the men of Troy can play their way into the tournament, the NCAA tournament. I thought it was interesting. I was looking, because I did this section this week on our document. I was looking at, you know, some of the stats. We always keep the stats just in case we want to mention them. You know, we talked about how terrible they've been in three-point percentage defense and free throw percentage. Free throw percentage, they jumped 21 spots. You know, going up, they improved their season. It's hard to improve your season average in anything 30 games into the season. They improved their season average like 1.5%. In 2 games. Like, that's crazy. That also tells you how bad they've been. But they moved up 21 spots in that. They moved up in three-point percentage defense like 6 or 7 spots, rebounding 6 or 7 spot, or rebound margin 6 or 7. So I just thought it was interesting that they jumped that many spots in several categories, which also shows you the potential of this team and what could have been at the same time of, oh, we'll see what can happen. Kobe Johnson's now 19th in steals per game after that 6th steal, 19th in the nation after the 6 steals. All right, let's move to our preview. The women of Troy, like we said, are off. They will receive their news on Selection Sunday of where exactly they will go, what bracket they'll be in. Will they be in one of the Portland brackets? So if they do win the opening 2 games, they would play in Portland for the Sweet 16, or will they be in the Albany side? We expect them to be a number 1 seed along with South Carolina, who's undefeated, obviously. And then Iowa wins the Big Ten championship. You would expect them to be a number 1. And then the 4th one, probably Stanford, it seems like. It seems like USC and Stanford will probably both get number 1 seeds, looking at the bracketologists. There's a couple other teams that are in there, Ohio State, Texas, and, you know, even UCLA could still be considered, but USC should be in front of them. So we'll likely get a number 1 seed for the first time since Cheryl Miller was on campus. I think that, again, just shows you once again how they continue to break down the barriers of where this program has been at since they've had the greats here on campus.
But Lindsey Gottlieb still isn't the Pac-12 Coach of the Year, according to the media and whoever else voted on it.
Or the coaches.
Or the coaches, thank you. I couldn't think of that other group. But anyway, I'm going to stop talking about that now, I promise.
Over to the men's side, the men will play Washington, as you mentioned, Wednesday at noon on the Pac-12 Network. So by winning against Arizona and UCLA beating Arizona State, USC moves into a three-way tie for ninth, like we mentioned. They have the tiebreakers, so they go from 11th. They're still tied for next to last. Let's be honest. They're still tied for next to last,
yeah.
But they're in the front of the bunch of that next for last. So they move up to 9. So with the 9 seed comes the early game and the fact that you will play the 1 seed if you win the opener. So probably not the ideal outcome for USC, but you got to be happy with the way they're playing. You take that over, you know, backdooring your way into a better matchup early in the tournament. So Washington is 17-14 on the season. They finished 9-11. They are the 8 seed. They're actually coming off a big win at Washington State. They won 74-68 there to beat their rivals. I think it was only the second game that Washington State's lost at home this season. So, you know, they are capable. They also just announced that they're firing their head coach. Mike Hopkins will not come back next season. What stands out to you about this matchup? They just played a couple weeks ago. USC was able to get a win with Isaiah Carter scoring 31 points and carrying the team late. What does USC got to do to get a win in this game?
They got to score because Washington can score the basketball with the best of them. It just the Hopkins firing throws a wrench into things a little bit, in my opinion, shotgun. And it could go one of two ways. Either the team is like, screw this, our coach isn't coming back. They lay down. I don't see that happening. Sometimes, even if the guy's still there, just the fact that he's not coming back and everyone knows it, that could sort of jolt the team. And I wonder what that will look like against USC. I mean, they had the big win against Washington State. And if you can beat Washington State, you can beat anyone in the conference, in my opinion, because Washington State beat Arizona twice. Anyway, I just wonder what Washington team are we going to see? Because I think they might have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder now with Hopkins not coming back. And who knows what the heck can happen Wednesday at noon. I think anything can happen in an early time slot. So a couple interesting factors heading into that game. But USC, they've shown that they can beat Washington just a couple weeks ago. They beat them in Seattle with Isaiah Collier scoring that great game. So it's certainly a winnable game for USC. But I think there are some factors at work that will be interesting to monitor on Wednesday.
Yeah, when they played in that last matchup, their only matchup of the season, DJ Rodman was 6-7 from the floor at 17, Boogie at 17. On the other side, Keon Brooks Jr. is the lead guy for the Huskies. He's averaging 21.3 points, 6.8 rebounds, so almost 7 rebounds. He's been the guy for him all year. He can go for 30 pretty quickly. And if he does, you better keep everyone else from going off. Sevier Wheeler, 14 points per game, 6 assists per game. He kind of runs the offense for them. He's pretty quick. Got to keep him out of the lane. Those are the two big guys of concern. I know Corin Johnson scored 21 against him in the first matchup, but if you can slow down Brooks, you slow down Wheeler, I think you slow down the Huskies, and they're going to give up points. They score a lot of points, but they're going to give up a ton of points too. They don't play much defense. So if USC shoots well and guards the three-point line like they've been doing the last little while, then I think they can win this game, which would set up if they do win. We'll go ahead and preview it. We're not going to preview the whole tournament, but if they do win, we know who the opponent would be the next day. That would be number 5, Arizona. Actually, I don't know what they're ranked now. I didn't see the latest rankings, but we're number 5. Number 6, I think they fell down to. Connor's mimicking to me. They would play them at noon on Thursday on the Pac-12 network as well, so not a national TV game. Again, the noon game, who prepares best? Who bounces back best for a noon game? That's always something with, hey, you're in Vegas. One of your players going out the night before type of thing. Are they staying out past 8 p.m.? You know, Vegas is a city that doesn't sleep. So if you're at 8 p.m. and you're like, it's, you know, I got to get some sleep. That's one or two players on the team. It's your normal 10 or 11 p.m. Some other players might be like, I'll go down to the casino real quick. I'll go do something else real quick. You never know. And Arizona is already locked up their spot in the NCAA tournament. They're going to be probably a 2 seed. Maybe if they lose to USC, they'd fall to a 3 or a 4. And I don't think they can climb their way back up to a 1 at this point after losing to USC, maybe. So what are they playing for? It always comes down to those type things. I think Tommy Lloyd will have them fired up and ready to go, especially after them losing to USC this last game. If they got a chance to immediately get retribution, they'd be fired up. They're 24-7 on the season. They finished 15-5. They clinched the league championship at UCLA. Caleb Love, his average is now down to 18.7 points per game after he went 1-for-10. He scored 18 seconds into the game, Connor, and then did not score again. The potential Pac-12 player of the year. Now, give some credit to USC, but he was also terrible in that game. So, I mean, he was not good. Pelle Larsen was not good, and he's Mr. Do-Everything for them. You know, he got in foul trouble. He was very, Isaiah Collier really frustrated him with a couple of the fouls that he was able to draw on him. Umar Ballo had a good game against USC. He averages 13 and 10. He'll have that, if not more, against USC. But USC won by holding Arizona to a season-low point total. The previous time, USC won 78-65 last week. In Tucson, Arizona scored 82 points. I think that's where it comes down to. It's like, if USC does play them again, how many points does Arizona score? If they get up to 82, USC, I don't feel like, is going to be in a great position, going into a dogfight, offense for offense with them. So we'll see, if USC does play them again and if they can hold them down again. I mean, if you can hold an opposing team starting guards to whatever it was for Arizona, that they finished, 5 for 25, you're going to win a lot of games. So if USC can do that again, I would put my money on them. Otherwise, I don't know if I feel that confident in doing it, even though USC is playing really well right now. I think you also have to factor in the second game in 2 days type of thing as well. I don't know. But there's a lot of things that go into it. What stands out to you about the potential matchup with Arizona if USC is to win their opener?
I've watched Arizona a decent amount this year. It just seems like when Kylan Boswell is playing well, they're usually playing well. And when he has a stinker, they can still win because they're talented in other spots, but it's a lot tougher for them. And he had a stinker against USC that first game, but so did every other guard pretty much. I know Pelle Larsen is sort of a hybrid, but he did not play well. And Caleb Love, as you mentioned, didn't play well. So I think it's a fact that the Arizona guards, if USC meets them again, won't be as bad as they were in the first game. You just have to think that way because they were so bad. I just was looking left and right during some of the plays they were making, like, what is going on here? Just some of those turnovers were brutal. I think they'll try to get Umar Ballo a little bit more involved because Vince Iwachukwu guarding Umar Ballo, that's just a recipe for success for Arizona, I think, even though Vince did a nice job against Ballo. I look at them to try to target him more on the inside because that's definitely a spot where Arizona has the advantage. And then you just hope your guards give you a good to average to good play after stinking it up. So USC, a lot has to go right for him to beat Arizona, but hey, a lot went right last game, and I certainly give him a shot to do it if they end up meeting in the second round.
Yeah, Boswell was a team worst negative 15 for the game as far as his plus or minus. And I mentioned they were 5 of 25 shooting. They were also 2 of 13 from three-point range and 13 turnovers, 5 each for Caleb Love and Larsen and 3 for Boswell. So, yeah, they – and like you said, some of those turnovers are like, what is going on here? Like, this looks like the roles are reversed. Like, this looks like a team that's below 500 and struggling for playing a number 5 team versus the other way around. I think they'll definitely come out much more fired up. So USC will have to play at their now. USC is capable at their full potential of beating Arizona at their full potential, I think. I mean, I think then it comes down to small margins, and I think Boogie Ellis has to get going. Like, you don't expect those guys to be terrible again. I don't expect Boogie Ellis to be 1 of 8 again. But that's what it's gonna take. It takes him playing well, Isaiah Collier and Kobe Johnson, all three of those guys playing well, and a little bit of contribution from down low for USC to have a chance. So we'll see if that all happens. But that is going to wrap it up for the regular season of the men. The women of Troy are already the Pac-12 champions. That's also going to wrap it up for this episode of the USC Triple Double Podcast, part of the Peristyle Podcast family. Please help us out and like, subscribe, share, do all those things. Leave us a 5-star review. We love all those. Also, you can send us feedback, comments, questions, and podcasts at uscfootball.com. Connor, any final thoughts this week?
It's March, and both USC teams are playing well. It took a while for the men to get there, but things are good right now. And hey, one game at a time for the men, and maybe they can match the women and be Pac-12 champions.
All I know is USC basketball teams are undefeated in March.
Yep.
So, if you do that for the entirety of March, I think that things would go pretty well for you, right? If you don't lose in March, you got a great chance of having a pretty good year.
that's true. And then, hey, is the Final Four in April sometimes? If you go undefeated,
I think it is. That's why I didn't say you would win a national championship, but you'd have a pretty good year.
Yes, you would. And if you go undefeated in April, you'll have a historic year.
That's true. Good point. Well, that's going to wrap it up. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thanks so much to Ahmad for jumping on with us. You know, he's been covering the women's team all season, so great to see him get out there to cover the women's basketball tournament. And we look forward to having more coverage when they are hosting the tournament in a couple of weeks. But that's it for me. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, saying thank you to everyone out there. Thank you to my co-host, Connor Morissette. Hopefully you guys can join us for the next episode of the USC Triple Double Podcast.